Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Monkey Tennis?
Well, this is great banter.
Hot, 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 hot ham.
Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Are you on an E? Monkey Tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest.
Monkey Tennis?
There have been times when I've been more rubbery than turgid.
Monkey Tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits.
Yes.
It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard.
Monkey Tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
Super Talk!
Brought to you by Ginster's Pasties.
Willkommen, bienvenue, hello, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Look at what this idiot did in America.
Nick Older.
Partridge, you wanker!
And Tom Stab.
You hairy Mary.
So, we're into the second part of our little reintroduction in 2018 to the world of Alan Partridge, going through some feedback from you, the listener, and also talking about some of the big Partridge events of 2017, namely the documentary that went out, and also our live show, very important, and looking forward to Partridge in 2018 with some more wild speculation about the new Alan series to come. But first, over to Nick.
So, Neil Gibbons, who is one of the writers with his brother Rob Gibbons, of Alan Partridge, I guess in its modern day form, tweeted a picture of the script for the upcoming BBC show, which will be airing, we think, at some point later this year. We then posted on Twitter asking you, the listeners, to speculate on what this show was going to be called.
Hello everyone, Nick here. Just a quick interjection to say that as we recorded this show about 4 or 5 weeks ago, we didn't realise what we know now, that is the new Alan Partridge show on the BBC will be called This Time with Alan Partridge. So just a quick note to cover the fact that we are about to discuss, debate and speculate on what that show might be called. Hopefully that explains it, and on with the show.
What we're going to do now is a quick fire round the table list of all the things that you have sent us in terms of titles for the show. So I'm going to start with Ben Leach, who says, my money is on Alan Partridge's Brexit Britain.
Ash Mead, Alan Partridge's show by Alan Partridge.
Dom Risk says, Alan Partridge's hard exit.
Barbara Kirk says, Alan Partridge's road to Brexit.
Sean Chambers says, Brexit masturbate.
Mikey Hogarth, Scissored Isle, retroactively turning a one-off into a series.
Steve Hale says Alan Partridge's last aha.
Matthew Taylor says Alan Partridge's big plate.
Nick Wells says Alan Partridge's top drawer.
Julian Tallock, Alan Partridge's second series.
Jonathan Marlowe, Alan Partridge's Ladyboy Adventure.
Stan Semple says Alan Partridge's A to Z of Britain.
Quentin Soldan says Alan Partridge's hard Brexit.
Tom Faulkner, Alan Partridge's mid-moaning platters. Alan Partridge and Jet from Gladiators tour the UK seeking out the mediocre in all things culinary.
John Denman says, who cares? That woeful film ruined an already long in the tooth comedy character. He was bloody funny back in the day. Shame it was so long ago. Do something new, Steve.
And Ben May says, I for one hope they're bringing back Bullseye with Alan in Jim Bowen shoes. Michael could take over for the always enigmatic Tony Green.
They are some... I would say if we're picking favourites, I like the idea of mid-moaning platters with Jet from Gladiator on a culinary tour with Alan. I think that's brilliant.
What I like is that he's fleshed out the detail. That's yeah. really good.
The pun alone is strong, but the concept is watertight.
Whereas with Alan, it's kind of the other way around normally, isn't it?
The concept, yes, yeah. very good. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There's obviously a lot of Brexit ideas there. So, yeah, when Neil Gibbons tweeted the top of the script, so it said Alan Partridge's, and then the words are blanked out, so we don't know even if it's two words, three words, whatever. I personally quite favour Alan Partridge's show by Alan Partridge, or really it should be Alan's show.
Yeah, I think we also have to give minus points to Sean Chambers, who's just suggested Brexit mass debate and hasn't included Alan Partridge's, which is the bit you could read on the script, so I don't know how you've missed that. Should we wildly speculate a little bit about this show? The impression that I get, because there's been talk about it being part of Brexit, not part of Brexit, we've gone on about that quite a bit already.
And I have seen Neil Gibbons tweet that it is not a show about Brexit.
I think people are getting a bit sick of it. I think the Brexit thing is obvious and wouldn't actually be that funny.
I suspect what it is that they are talking mainly about how the BBC would come to re-employ Alan.
Yeah.
And they're obviously saying...
And the context of that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and so they're basically... I imagine that the scenario is this, that the BBC is accused of left-wing bias, as it often is.
Yeah.
And then they've basically had to get him back as the only person who's available as a kind of sort of Farage-like figure to provide quote-unquote balance.
Yeah, which makes sense. But it's and I think we did talk about this on a previous episode, that it's basically that one quote from Coogan in The New Economist or whatever it was called is basically been taken totally out of context.
And if I was to speculate...
No, The New European, I think it was.
Yeah. If I was to speculate as to what the title's going to be, I don't know the exact wording, but I think it'll be Alan Partridge's, and then it will be another bastardization like Scissor Dial was to Sceptre Dial.
Yeah.
It'll be something that is kind of, you know, maybe a bit lofty, but is basically getting a well-known phrase wrong.
I mean, it really depends what kind of format the show follows. That would obviously, like, if we knew more about that, that would probably give some indications about the title. Because, for example, when Coogan was on The One Show saying, oh, it's going to be a show not dissimilar to this, which interestingly is what Simon Greenall said when he was at our live show. But I did wonder whether Simon's saying that just based off seeing Steve on The One Show, like just watching him on telly.
I did get the impression that he wasn't necessarily privy to inside info.
Yeah.
It was his guess rather than his knowledge.
I'd like to see something a little bit along the lines of what they've done with W1A and 2012, sort of like a mock documentary about Alan being back on the BBC after so many years away. I think that could work.
I've said it before on the pod as well, but I'd love to see a mixture of Alan in front of and behind the camera. So you kind of get...
What was the example you gave?
The Larry Sanders show.
So you kind of get the cream of I'm Alan Partridge mixed with the cream of Know Me, Knowing You in one show.
Yeah, that would be perfect, wouldn't it? And it also, that would give you the option to get characters like
back.
Sidekick Simon or Michael if he's back from the dead. You know, you could get those in there in like the kind of... behind the camera moments.
We'd all like to see more Lynn and Michael back on the back
more
on
Lynn,
our screens.
More, I mean, imagine Lynn, Michael, and sidekick Simon with Alan in a room.
All vying for his attention and love.
Yeah. A couple of other people tweeted us their hopes for the new series. Andy Godwin said he'd love to see him as a presenter on Top Gear, so he's hoping for a car-themed show. And John Ratton says, I think a series about Alan being a UKIP councillor and then trying to get elected and subsequently failing as an MP would be absolutely
like a sort of Farage character, always failing.
Yeah. I feel like that'd be a bit too bleak almost.
Alan is pretty tragic.
I think it would be funnier if he ran as an independent, personally. I think there's more humour.
The Partridge Party.
Yeah.
A party amongst the pigeons.
We'll
come back to that.
I quite like Andy's suggestion about the Top Gear thing, but more as like a skit within an actual bigger, wider show.
Like, and again, if it was something like The One Show, then you've got a lot of... with that format, you can kind of do anything.
Could vary week to week.
You could have a Simon or a Michael as a roving reporter doing Vox Pops.
Amazing.
Like, you could have Alan doing regular car segments. Could be a lot of fun.
Next up, we go to emails from listeners, and the first one is from Tim Lake. He says, Hi, Nick, Adam and the Toms following the recent series.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Why does Nick get top billing there?
You did point that out earlier,
didn't
you?
I did point that out.
And you guys have been given a compound name, like a married couple.
Yeah. Tim, I'm not happy about that whatsoever.
What are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm going round to the Toms for a game of whist.
All right. Let me start. Hi, the Toms, Adam and Nick.
Following better. The yes. I mean, it's getting better.
No mention of Jed, sorry. Yeah.
Not even mentioned.
He's never mentioned in any of the correspondence, is he? There's no Jed fans out there.
Please,
Jed fans, if you're out there, please get in touch.
No, I don't want to hear from Jed fans.
I do.
No, the Burger Sauce Brigade.
Here's what I think we should do for Jed. People should write in with their scenarios. For example, you're trapped on a desert island and you've only got a bowl of pudding. And then Jed will give a word based on the scenarios that people write in.
Or they could contact us via the medium of one word only.
Yes, very good.
Yes, like one word tweets.
Right, back to Tim Lake's email. Following the recent series on iPartridge, I've been thinking about the characters in the Partreverse.
Oh, I like that.
I like that a lot.
That's good.
Obviously, the writing across all of the oeuvre is fantastic and gives even the minor characters enough depth to make them interesting and avoids the shallow cartoon villain. Apart from maybe like Dave Clifton, is he? I guess he's not cartoony, but
finish
he is.
Finish the email.
All right, fair enough. That said, who do you think is the least likable character across all of the shows, books, and film? My first inclination is Danny Sinclair in Alpha Papa, who certainly comes across as a dick, but we also don't really know much about him. Ben in I'm Alan Partridge is pretty smug, but actually seems like a decent guy who just likes pushing Alan's buttons. I'm inclined to say it's Alan himself. Although he has plenty of moments when you feel sorry for him or side with him, we also see his motivations very clearly, especially in iPartridge, and they are always self-serving. Anyway, enough from me. Thanks for the cracking podcast and the live show this week, which we attended and very much enjoyed. Brackets, Mr. Greenall was fantastic. All the best, Tim.
Oh, lovely email. Thanks,
lovely
Tim.
Email. Yeah. Thanks, Tim.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because, yeah, you see the most of Alan. Alan's consistently a dick. I would say if I'm... we've talked about Danny Sinclair versus Ben before. I think Danny Sinclair is worse.
100%.
But I think... 100%.
I think to call Danny Sinclair a villain is kind of too grandiose. I just think he's a bit of an idiot, isn't he?
There isn't any villains, I don't think, but Danny Sinclair...
Oh, hang on.
I don't know. I guess so. I think if you're talking about people who are morally reprehensible, Greg the station manager in Alpha Papa, he's got to be up there.
It's the people that come in from shape, if anything, isn't
it?
Yeah,
a horrendous coward who leaves women to die. Yeah,
they're all
sleep well, Greg.
They're all in Alpha Papa, though, is what we're kind of saying.
Like, yeah, it's certainly rich in shits, isn't it?
I think Tim probably is right that in a way Alan almost is the least likable, but like you say, that he's the character he's see
just,
the most of,
he's
so that's
flawed,
what's going
to
happen.
Next email's from Joe Cooper. He says, hey guys, I'm new to Monkey Tennis, like literally the last few days, and loving it. Thanks very much, Joe. He says, I used to be in a semi-popular band called Cooper, who I actually do vaguely remember.
Sorry, Joe, I've not heard of him.
I mean, he does say semi-popular, so... We used to do warm-up and secret gigs as Cockpiss Partridge, which I mean, you say semi-popular, but I suppose if you have to have a secret name for your warm-up gigs, you must have been a relatively big deal.
Good point.
We had an intro track not dissimilar to yours in the States. They just thought we were strange. Anyway, I'm sure you're inundated with emails and people pointing to bits, etc., but I'm going to be a complete dick and add to it. Feel free, Joe. Feel free. He says, the one thing I noticed from episode one, and that's some pretty shoddy camera work. See the attached images that he sent to us. We'll put them on the socials. And you can see another camera in shot at one point, and what appears to be a finger covering the top corner of the lens on another. My other comment is that you guys mentioned that Alan has changed his own name on his car, which was strange. This is because it was Michael who did it. He says outside the lift that he'll do a quick fix for now. Oh, yeah,
changing it to
Cook Pass Babtridge.
Yes.
And I can't tell if it's just Michael being funny or if he genuinely believes Partridge is a swear word. My only other comment thus far is on episode 2 of I'm Alan Partridge with regards to the continuity error. I don't think it is one. When Alan mentions, brackets, lies, that they've got a second series, all the staff go over to the corner and start putting all the party hats, etc. on.
Yeah, but they put them on in a matter of about half a second. I still think it's sloppy editing. Mm.
Other than that, it really is first class. Bash your ass, Joe. Bash it right back, Joe.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Joe. We have another email in from Richard Attlee, and I think this is another one of our balls ups, basically. I think in a previous episode, we talked about were we sure that Alan's wife, Carol, whether she definitely got the house. Richard emails the following to us. How do we know Alan's wife gets the house? The immersion heater phone call.
So what he's done, he's answered his own question there.
Yeah, exactly.
What I also like is that that's all he put in the email. So he's basically written us an email in the format of a Christmas cracker joke.
Yes. It's question, it's answer, it's done.
Next up, we have an email from Neo, who says, I've got a theory. In the third episode of I'm Alan Partridge Series 1, Chris Morris stars as a farmer on Alan's show, and Alan used to work with Chris Morris on The Day Today. My theory is that Chris Morris from The Day Today went on Alan's radio show to test him. It might sound stupid, and there's no evidence to prove it, but that's my theory.
Yes, it does. No, there isn't. And thanks anyway.
And next we come to Bombshells, and we have three crackers from Mighty Blackout, who emails us and says, hi gents, the audiobook is one of my go-to choices when I'm out of podcasts and on the move, so I've listened to it an unhealthy number of times. The best part being, of course, that there's usually something new to be found in each pass. And he goes on to list a few points, and he starts with, in chapter 30, Classic House, Alan briefly mentions a liaison with a former employee. Now, obviously, that is probably a reference to his tryst with Jill. He says that Sonia was responsible for awakening my dormant libido and made it do press ups.
And to be clear, this is Alan, not you.
This is Alan, yep. Not me. Okay. Yeah. Apart from a truly distasteful dalliance with a member of staff years earlier, she still sends me Christmas cards with glitter glued onto a picture of our Lord with a sort of ready brick glow around him, and inside the inscription says, "For us unto this day a child is born." Now, this is back to me now. End of quote.
Back to you.
Back to me. Now, bearing in mind...
Back to Mighty Blackout.
Now, bearing in mind what we see, Alan Partridge obviously wasn't a fly-in-the-wall documentary. And is this an implication that Jill went on to have Alan's baby? Yes. And is dropping yearly hints to Alan that he hasn't realised it yet.
Wow. That is a colossal bombshell, and I think there is a lot of weight to it.
Yeah, and obviously, as we know, Alan says that during the lights out sequence, he says that he has no sheath, so he is going... he's going bareback.
Also, going into extensive detail, Mighty Blackout goes on to say, and his suggestion that Jill may be post-menopausal is derailed before she feels like she could answer. I mean... I would have thought it was a relatively safe bet, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I also like he says they weren't at it for very long, admittedly, but maybe the moose interruption wasn't the only premature thing happening there.
So basically, that is a brilliant theory, isn't it?
Well, there's even more to it looking through this email. If you figure that their dalliance took place on Valentine's Day, which we know that it did, the birthday from a conception then would be around the first couple of weeks of November. Not too unreasonable a time for a Christmas card to arrive at Alan's house.
The plot does thicken.
He mentions cards plural, and it sounds like he's being sent the same image and message every year, which isn't normal behaviour. And there's even more to this theory. Is the glued on glitter a hint that his child may have helped with the card? I mean, that is a dynamite theory. It actually pulls together. It holds up.
Yeah. Not Partridge maths work.
Not to mention forensic levels of detail.
Quite impressive.
So, but the bombshells continue. Point two, he says, in relation to your recent observation that Alan is an unreliable narrator, I, Partridge, has this to say about his parents from chapter 29. I'll switch into Alan now. In recent years, I've been to the send-offs of Tony Hares, Chris Feather, Mum and Dad, and the racist mother of the woman who works for me. The first and worst death of the lot was Mum's. With Dad in no fit state to do anything, I agreed to say a few words at the service. What's the guy who wrote this in? Major Blackout?
Mighty Blackout.
He continues, that's all fine until you read this in Nomad from chapter 2. Obviously, we're yet to cover Nomad, but we'll dip in for the purposes of this bombshell. Alan's voice again. It's 20th of February 1995. I'm standing at a graveside, the wind whistling through my hair like a wind whistle. My father died on 15th of February and has now been buried. My mother tuts and looks away. So... back to Mighty Blackout. In one book, his mum died first. Then in another recollection, it was his dad. With the Gibbons encyclopedia and timeline, it's inconceivable that this is a slip-up, surely. Is this a subtle time-delayed joke to remind the audience that Alan's memory and or point of view shouldn't be trusted? I genuinely think...
it's a slip-up.
This could be a writer's error.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think it's too meta, isn't it? Or just too...
well, I get that. Well, again, the whole thing is we'll never know for sure unless if the Gibbons brothers want to come on the show. But I mean, you could read this either way. It can be an unreliable narrator thing, or it could just be they've ballsed up the timeline. It's hard to be certain. And I think Mighty Blackout went on with one more point as well, which ties into the unreliable narration as well.
Carpet bombing us with that.
It will not stop. A carpet bombing is a somewhat appropriate choice of words in a way. The next point here is that we are on to Alan doing hospital radio at St. Luke's. So he's starting a show saying, "Good morning, St. Luke's," in the style of "Good morning, Vietnam." Good Morning Vietnam was released in 1987. So Alan says about this time, he spent 94 wonderful months behind the mic at St. Luke's, but by autumn 1983, like most of the patients on the wing, his days were numbered. So going through Alan's words, he's left that radio station in 83. What year was Good Morning Vietnam released? 1987.
Oops.
What? So, is it an unreliable narrator? Is it a writer's balls up? That, we do not know.
That seems like an oversight.
Yeah, and that's probably the least minor of all of them. Let's focus on, basically, Jill is the mother of Alan's child. That's what we've taken away from this. So maybe the new series could be Alan meeting his new child and Jill being the mother.
Oh, brilliant.
Imagine that. Great.
That kid would be, what, like 15, 16 by now, roughly?
16.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect, mm-hmm. Perfect time.
That is perfect.
To reintroduce him.
Oh, imagine if.
It'd be like Uncle, wouldn't it?
And he'd get a fight. He'd get a second go at all of the things he failed at with Fernando and Denise.
So whilst we're talking about matters of the Alan timeline, so actually, no, they wouldn't be 16 because that was I'm Alan Partridge series one, which was 97.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
So that actually means they would 20, be turning 21. 21 this year,
the big
which
2-1.
Ties in nicely to the next thing we were going to talk about. So last year, 2017, marked 20 years of I'm Alan Partridge Series 1. So we took to our socials to ask you for your favourite quotes from that series, seminal series, and head and shoulders above the rest, smell my cheesy mother was the most mentioned out of anything.
A cheese landslide.
Yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed it wasn't Monkey Tennis, but we won't be bitter bastards about that. But, I mean, you could have just played to an easy crowd there.
Could it also have been a subconscious thing because it was Christmas and there was probably a lot of cheese around?
A lot of cheese around. Yeah, very good point. But yeah, at Christmas time, at the end of 2017, that actually marked 25 years of Alan the character and the BBC Two documentary. What was it called? Whom, what, why, where, when? Something like that?
Something like that,
yeah. Something along those lines. Yeah, we obviously all watched it. We were live tweeting along, so mm-hmm. I'm going to pass mm-hmm. to Nick, who's got the highlights of some activity around the documentary.
Okay, so I'm going to talk you through some of the highlights of the documentary feedback which came into us via Twitter. So first up was a poll.
Not another one of Nick's polls, was it?
Luckily, I don't think Nick set this one up, so it's fine.
I wasn't allowed in the socials. So,
for the best.
Top day-to-day goal reaction. The winner was, with 47%, shit.
Yeah. Can't really argue with that. Or more accurately, shit.
Did you see that?
Like a traction engine.
The next Twitter poll was Steve says Lynn loves Alan. Felicity disagrees. 66% say it's fondness at best.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's right.
I mean, we should probably chat about the documentary in a minute, but I thought that was really interesting that you had that brilliant juxtaposition where Steve thinks one thing about the characters and Felicity thinks the exact opposite. Mm-hmm.
And then we asked the question, what's the worst thing you have ever done at a funeral? So Lottie Lamshank. Oh,
she's
hello.
Back.
Hello again.
Our Monopoly creator.
She said she fell asleep at a wake. ironic. in my defence, I was on a lot of medication. Everyone was very kind about it.
Yep.
Aww.
It's a nice story, isn't it? That's a lovely
story. Nick's lovely story.
Next up is Fashion Worked. I assume not their real name, but they write, I laughed at someone who turned up in a St. John's Ambulance uniform and tried to act like it was a military funeral. He even got a salute. Good work, Fashion.
Sounds a bit like something Michael would do as well, wouldn't he? Yeah. Turn up in his TA uniform.
And finally...
Hang on. Has Michael been in the TA? There's no evidence for that.
And finally, from Barbara Kirk, I laughed when My Way was played at my uncle's funeral, but then everyone else did.
Funny story.
Would you watch an Alan Partridge penned opera? And what do you think he would call it? Was another question that we put to you. And I'm going to say...
These are the two best responses we got.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is a name. It's A...
I'll just go with the Twitter handle.
Riesel.
That's the one.
The chocolate chew.
Reason.
All that chocolate.
Sorry, Nick's just gone briefly mindless there.
He wants to get a train, but yet he's going off on tangents.
Yeah. Writes, opera classic.
Oh, dear.
Like Classic House.
It's like Classic House, but classic opera. And then Kenny Ramsey says... Madam Butter My Arse.
Oh, I really that like is that. Brilliant. That, is, that good. Is absolutely brilliant. I was very pleased when I saw that response rolling on the Twitters.
Lovely stuff.
Do you want to spend a couple of moments just chatting about the documentary, what we thought about it?
I would love to.
Yep. Let's go.
They got all the big names back, which was really nice. Even Sally Phillips and everyone, if only to prove that she was actually acting and not just laughing.
It's funny. I hadn't really noticed that there's pretty much a moment in nearly every single episode where she turns away and laughs. Yeah. In my mind, it happened once or twice.
Like
but
a
there
silent
are so many
catchphrase.
Instances. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There were a couple of revelations in there that I didn't already know. I would say it was fairly light on. Massive brand new information, wasn't it? It was more a celebration of things you already know.
It was DVD extras with clips packaged together in an hour-long BBC-friendly soundbite that stretched over an hour.
I mean, I really enjoyed the stuff like the behind-the-scenes candid footage of them rehearsing back in the day.
Yeah, the rehearsal stuff was great because it hadn't been seen before.
Yeah, I would, as obviously Partridge aficionados and experts.
We are, yes, hello.
We've covered a lot of stuff that was featured in the documentary, so I would like to have seen more of that personally.
Yeah, and I think it's a bit of a shame, I think, how it was initially kind of announced that I think the expectation was there was going to be more behind-the-scenes footage. And I guess, you know, these things, they do go through a lot of edits before the final show, so... You know, I can imagine a sort of thing. They probably had like a 2-hour program. They had to chop down to like 58 minutes or something. But I think what's been interesting, I think, through our socials, I think we've had a lot of messages from people. They've kind of re-engaged with Alan as a character because they've had that kind of solid hour to kind of reacquaint themselves with all these kind of classic moments. And I think also it works quite well. It's almost like a beginner's guide to Alan because they have covered every step. And obviously, we've covered it much more in depth over 40 episodes. So why not go back to the start if you're joining us now?
You say that, though. One thing notable by its absence, because perhaps it didn't fit the narrative of the show, is there's absolutely no mention of Knowing Me, Knowing Yule. What they do is they get up to the end of Knowing Me, Knowing You, where he obviously shoots Forbes McAllister. And then for the purposes of the documentary, they then say, we had to work out how we were going to get him back. After that,
well, I think
ignoring the fact that they did a whole special that they didn't make any reference to.
Well, you had the clip of him punching hairs, which was in it.
Yeah, but they sort of made that look like it was part of an earlier episode.
Yeah, that's true. I guess they don't talk about the books either, but I guess that's
very
hard
difficult
to talk about on a TV show.
It's
easy to talk about on a podcast over 8 episodes, though, fortunately for us.
Yeah, I would have just liked one little clip at the end of maybe like Bill Oddie like popping up and going, I don't really know why I'm here.
I really shouldn't be here, you know.
There's a couple of revelations in there, I think. One is that obviously Patrick Marber left as one of the writers before I'm Alan Partridge, and it turns out that he really didn't like I'm Alan Partridge.
That was interesting.
Yeah, like they said, he basically didn't give his approval.
Yeah.
But then they went ahead and did it anyway. So.
Yeah, but it's certainly funny to hear them kind of being quite insecure about whether or not it's funny, whether or not it works, when it's now just given that it's a comedy gold, basically.
I still think it's such a shame that Marber left the whole thing because he's a brilliant comedic actor, and I think he is a loss to Partridge as a whole, I think, from a writing perspective and a performance perspective.
I kind of agree, but then I also think if you look at what the Gibbons brothers have done with it, like Alan has evolved, not revolved.
I definitely think you need a fresh pair of eyes in 2017 or 2010 or whenever they started. But Marber left relatively early in the context Alan, I would have loved to have seen him carry on. I would love to have seen him in I'm Alan Partridge.
I mean, you might have got a bit more consistency. I mean, we've kind of talked about this over previous episodes, but I still think, for me, like, I'm Alan Partridge series one is probably the classic kind of definitive sitcom series. I just think I'm Alan Partridge series two is so much more of a caricature, and I think Armando actually described him as more grotesque.
Uber real, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that, because it becomes so slapstick and so over the top.
And some of it works and some of it maybe not so much.
And I think maybe Marble would have helped rein that in a bit more. I don't know, because you still have those kind of over-the-top slapstick moments in Knowing Me, Knowing You, but they just feel a bit more suited to the character and the plot development.
And obviously he wanted to go on and be a proper serious playwright.
He was writing closer at the time,
which obviously went on to be massive.
But I think also personally, it was great to see some of that rehearsal footage, but I'd love to see some actual behind-the-scenes footage of the actual shows being made as well. That'd be quite interesting to see. And particularly, you know, when we were chatting to Simon Greenwell a few months ago, and he's telling us about all these brilliant scenes that never made it. And, I'd wonder, were those things actually filmed and never made the cut? Like, are there extra scenes on the cutting room floor somewhere?
I get the impression that a lot of that stuff, especially the things Simon mentioned, were things that were kind of, you know, knocked around in rehearsal before filming was going on. I don't get the impression that there is a lot on the cutting room floor, because most of it's filmed in front of a live audience, so they only had people for a very finite amount of time. They didn't have days to kind of redo stuff. I think they would do one or two takes, and I guess
there are extra scenes on the DVDs and what have you. So maybe.
I also think that maybe the footage, if there is any that exists, it probably isn't that interesting or engaging, because quite a lot of people say, from listening to the interviews and what people are saying about the filming process, it wasn't a particularly easy process. It wasn't a particularly enjoyable experience. It was quite fraught. There were a lot of rewrites, and it was on the go. A lot of writing being done on set and stuff like that. So it probably wasn't a particularly fun environment. So that footage wouldn't be great.
That seems to be quite consistent.
Yeah.
Across. Maybe, I mean, with Naomi Knowing You, with the chat show, kind of some of that was improvising on the fly because he had an earpiece and stuff. And then you've basically got on the set writing for I'm Alan Partridge series two at the least.
Yeah.
And you've got essentially down to the wire writing for the film as well. Yep. So that is quite interesting.
There's a theme.
It's this comic creation that we love, but so much of it has been written basically off the cuff in a panic on a set before cameras about to roll.
Another revelation for me, and I'm surprised they actually spent time talking about this in a fairly short documentary to sum up 25 years, is that Steve Coogan was very keen on the Foster's sponsored Mid-Morning Matters comeback being quite muted, not being advertised, which... I can sort of understand his reasoning, but you're coming back with a character that beloved after, you know, a fair few years.
He's been away for, 8 years at this point?
It's like someone trying to come back and make a low-key Star Wars film. You know, it doesn't matter whether you want it to be muted or not. The return of Alan Partridge is going to spread.
I think I agree with Steve. I think it's fair enough. I think there's probably a little bit of concern from his point of view and the writer's point of view that at this point, remember, Alan had been away for quite a long time.
Is it about 8 years?
Eight or nine years apart. Did he do some specials, like comic relief specials?
A few comic relief appearances, but not
a proper series. Hadn't been on television or out there in the public eye in any way, shape or form. So there's probably a little bit of nervousness about how this was going to go down and whether it would be received as well. Because, you know, people move on, people's taste change, etc. So, you know, it might not have gone down as well as they'd hoped. That was a possibility.
But, I mean, his thing was about like, oh, I didn't want it to be on billboards and stuff. But it's like, mate, you've just done a massive deal with Foster's to launch one of the most famous comedy characters.
But you can still put it out on YouTube and sort of like gently seed it out without putting loads of money behind it, because I think they might have been concerned that it might not have gone down well.
Yeah, I'm kind of in two minds about it, because I think there probably is a large proportion of the audience post I'm Alan Partridge that literally wouldn't know about it unless you put it on a billboard. They're not going to go hunting it out. The other thing that I suppose is how much promo should be put behind what's basically a 15-minute web series. You know, it's not...
That's being sponsored by a booze company.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And I think there is maybe just another way you can look at it, which is almost like you can kind of call bullshit on it. And is that Coogan just... It's a bit of a defence mechanism. Like, I never wanted it to be massive because... the thing is, what's interesting is those episodes, they're not online anymore.
Yeah.
Particularly not in any official...
Because Sky own them now, right?
So, like, in terms of... You can't go on and say, oh, what were the views when that was on the Foster's channel?
But he doesn't need to do that. He didn't need to say that at all. He didn't need to say that in the documentary because, you know, they've been relatively well-received and you know, done pretty well.
But I think, when you move it on from Foster's onto Sky, obviously the viewing figures... Having it on Sky Atlantic compared to BBC Two,
and we have some information on viewing figures coming up.
We'll get into that over the coming weeks. But I mean, obviously, they're not going to be comparable. Mm. So that is like the limitations of the station that's broadcasting it. So again, I just wonder, is that kind of like Coogan kind of can tee up a defence of the viewing figures not being what Partridge was in the 90s and early 2000s,
right,
because the broadcast is different. But you can also wrap it up by saying, well, I didn't want it to be big anyway.
Yeah. But the industry has changed so much. But then also, the way people consume TV has changed so much in that since...
I just did it for me. And if anyone likes it, that's a bonus.
Oh, yeah, that classic line. There we go.
That was kind of... I think that's the summary of all of our thoughts on the documentary. But it was really enjoyable trip down memory lane.
Hold on a sec. Jed, did you watch it?
No.
Jed.
We're nearly at the end of this feedback roundup, 2017 look back, 2018 look forward episode. But just one more thing. Shannon Hay got in touch on Facebook to say good morning. It's not morning right now.
When they sent it, I guess.
Inaccurate. Yeah. I've done a little Alan Partridge mashup. I'd be most grateful if you shared it on your page. Well, we'll go one better and perhaps play a little bit of it to see us out of this episode. Thank you for sending it in, Shannon.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it for this episode. Join us next week when we're going to be diving back into Mid-Morning Matters with episode 2 of series 1.
Yep.
You can get in touch with us, thepartridgepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, twitter.com/thepartridgepod, and Instagram is @monkeytennispod.
And just quickly, I want to add, if you're new to listening to the Monkey Tennis podcast, if you're unsure why we're going into episode 2 of Mid-Morning Matters...
probably is worth explaining, yeah.
We actually covered Mid-Morning Matters episode 1 at a live special in front of an intimate audience at Warner Music HQ in London. So if you want to listen to episode 1, just go back a few episodes and you'll find it in your feed.
So that's it. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks so much to all the people who've got in touch, especially those who've tweets and Facebook posts.
Thank you very
emails
much.
We've read out.
Yeah, really good stuff.
And yes, we'll see you next week. From all of us at Monkey Tennis, thanks and goodbye.
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 Jed, I'm feeling generous. Would you like to close out the episode with a bonus word?
Fuck.
Unbelievable.
Thank you very much for being this morning's farmer. Caroline, line 4, hello.
Hello, Alan.
Hello.
Hello, yeah, have you got a brain or is your head just full of shit?
Okay, Mike from Palgrave, are you there, sir?
Oh, you ignorant.
Whoosh! Shoestring, Taggart, Spender, Bergerac, Morse, scum, subhuman scum.
Tosser.
Bastard.
What?
Cockpit. Long Stanton Spice Museum.
What?
One aggressive body scrub. Roll on the thighs of a virgin.
Ooh.
The queen is dead. Lady shapes. Been working like a Japanese prisoner of war. Hard work, but there's no affection. The eagle has landed.
20-foot-high chickens.
Fanny. 40-year-old scorcher.
We're not gay.
Tell me about the lady boys. Got them a bloody bloke. Inner city sumo. Monkey tennis. Partridge amongst the pigeons.
I'll just speak over you.
Aha!
What I got until, then the one deer, you know, a lot of them's from broken homes.
What?
Cock do you get? Oh, governor. Jill will be sleeping with me tonight.
Ooh.
12 inches. Cock piss party. Oh, God. That's bang out of order. Because I'm a bloody bloke. Battered. It flashed on the first yank.
Boosh. Boosh.
Oh, fuck off. I don't actually agree with that. Fascinating creatures, though.
Oh, forget it.
Aha! Jurassic Park.
Come and see bitter.
Bang!
Bang!
Please! Inner city sumo. Monkey tennis? That's the small talk. Now let's get down to business.
I'm leaving you, you cow!
Bang!
Bang!
Please!
Fuck off.
I'm really scared. You daft racist. Scum. Bastard.
Please!
Stop telling me what to do!
Ruddy hell. Fuck off.
Aha!
Because I'm a bloody bloke.
Ooh.
Jet! Back, back. Watchdog.
Tosser.
Can we talk about me?
Monkey Tennis is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. If you're interested in podcasts about Red Dwarf, X-Files, what to watch on Netflix, or TV pilot episodes pitched against one another, find them at postpoppodcasts.com. Our artwork is by Finn McLean, and you can find his website at finn.design. The theme is an excerpt from Galloping Home by Dennis King. Thanks for listening.
North Norfolk Digital.
Monkey tennis?
This is great banter.
Hot, 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 hot ham. Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Are you on an E? Monkey tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest. Monkey tennis?
There have been times when I've been more
robbery than turgid.
Monkey tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits!
Yes.
It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard.
Monkey tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.